take. If you afraid, then you come along with me. And I know what you came here to do. Knock, knock, up, let me see you get loose. It's going down for real. Welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Quite simply, the Browns ran out of time against the Kansas City Chiefs, falling 17-13 as the Chiefs won their ninth in a row over the Browns. And it was a game where the Browns had the ball down four and were driving. But ultimately, the clock struck midnight and the Browns were done. Johnny Manziel was hugely frustrated when it was all said and done. And I think part of the reason was when you go back and watch the tape, he just was not good enough from the pocket. And he was not good enough throwing the football. Yes, he ran for a franchise record. Franchise record, folks. 108 yards as a quarterback. But it wasn't enough because in the National Football League, number one, you can't survive running like that. But number two, you've got to be better from the pocket. And Johnny Manziel simply was not. He missed too many throws. He had one to Gary Barnidge that would have been a walk-in touchdown or at least a 60-yard play if somebody had tracked down big play gear. It just wasn't good enough from the pocket for Johnny. And ultimately in the NFL, you got to be able to throw it. I thought running the ball, though, he was effective. I thought Isaiah Crowell did a great job running the football, 16 carries, 88 yards. The defense showed up in the second half. And it was a bizarre game plan from Andy Reid. He kind of took the pedal off his foot off the gas in the second half and let the Browns back into it. But again, just not enough time, not enough big plays, not enough plays from the pocket from Johnny Manziel. We know Pro Football Focus was harsh on him. But just watching the tape, you just saw it. He missed guys that were open. He missed reads that were there. His footwork wasn't there. I love the way he competed. I love the way that he gave everything he had. But at the end of the day, going forward, you can't have games like this throwing the football if you want to win as a quarterback in the NFL.
No, absolutely not. And I think, you know, as you evaluate Johnny Manziel's performance, you take the wind, the weather into account on what might have led to the demise of Johnny Manziel's ineffectiveness. And then you have to think, as a long-term plan, you're going to be playing Cincinnati and Baltimore here in Cleveland, in Pittsburgh in December with games, hopefully that means something where the weather's not going to be pristine. And, you know, we've had a great winter thus far. And some of those things, I think, truly affected Johnny Manziel. His ability not setting his feet and in that wind, no matter how strong his arm was, could not deliver the ball accurately for his playmakers to make the plays. I got to say, I give, you know, John DeFilippo a vote of confidence in regards to the fact that the plan that he created for Johnny Manziel to know that Johnny and that zone read would be effective against some of the fronts that we saw against Kansas City. And then one other factor that we have to take into account is both Tom Bali and Justin Houston missing the football game. It could have been really ugly because guys got close all day and Johnny Manziel kept the play alive. But for whatever reason, he just was not effective, you know, even out of the pocket on the run, you know, throwing across his body, extending the play. There was some hitch between him and his receivers or his playmakers and their ability to get open, find space, and him to deliver the football accurately to extend some of those drives, especially in the second half when the door was open for a comeback.
It certainly was open, and unfortunately for the Browns, Johnny Manziel could not get them through that door. They tried, got an interception, the first of Nate Orchard's career, but it just was not enough ultimately for this team to get the job done against the Kansas City Chiefs. And hopefully it's something they could build on. I'll give them the effort was there. I thought the tenacity was there from start to finish. It was a game where early on they were sloppy, but as the defense settled in, they did a great job. Didn't allow a point in that second half, which I thought was pretty remarkable. They had a 21-play drive at one point, but unfortunately only got three out of it. And that's the difference. That's the difference between winning and losing.
100%. And that's something that I collectively, as you look at Johnny Manziel, he's now both thrown for 300-plus yards and had a 70-plus percent completion percentage. He's now run for over 100 yards. So we get the gamut of what Johnny Manziel is capable of in the air, through the air in an NFL football game, and now on the ground, you know, in the National Football League. But the one thing that concerns me with Johnny Manziel in general is a Johnny Manziel-led offense can't score, can't finish for whatever reason, and not to the point where you can get close enough to win a football game or outscore an opponent, which you have to do, you know, every few weeks in the National Football League when your defense is just not firing on all cylinders and limiting what the other team is doing to you.
Right, and that was the problem. That was the problem in this game for this team, and it was a game where you felt like it wasn't close, and then all of a sudden it was close, and you said, oh, man. You know, if you're a Chiefs fan, you probably were like, how are we going to blow this game? And unfortunately, at the end of the day, not enough. We saw some good blocking. I thought Mitchell Schwartz, especially run blocking, had one of his best days.
I agree with that after watching it back.
Saw it on the Crowell touchdown run. Saw it on some of the other runs where they ran right and had a lot of success there. Again, I thought that it was another rough day for Cam Irving at right guard in the run blocking, especially too many whiffs. Alex Mack, I thought, had a rough day also at center. And Johnny. Don Terry Poe is a beast. Johnny with his legs was good. With his arm, he wasn't good. And I think that's what he meant. Overall, in the NFL, to win, you're going to have to be good with your arm. And that's why he was saying 10 other guys were good enough. Coach was good enough. The plays were there. There was the one play on the third down where he tried to hit Barnage and threw it behind him on the slant that if he had just moved his eyes over because they ran two slants off the left, Travis Benjamin was running wide open right in the middle of the field, an easy pitch and catch.
And one other thing that confused me as I rewatched the game last night, you know, after getting back from vacay, which was amazing, when the time, you know, no timeouts or, you know, the time's ticking down with the game under a minute, when I looked at what the Kansas City defense was giving you, and say there's 50-plus seconds left on the clock, why? There were huge windows in the middle of the field, but yet we ran sideline routes and crossing routes that runs you right into a sideline. When you could have, at that point, take a 16-yard chunk play down the middle of the field, right? Get tackled, maybe break a tackle yards after the catch, get down for a 23-yard gain, run the team up, clock it, and then you start working the sideline when you're limited. But I thought when we had an opportunity to move down the field, the middle of the field was open, and we didn't take it. We worked the sidelines. We sailed the one over. We got the late throw to Benjamin, you know, for a nice chunk play. But some of that has to do with Johnny Manziel. Some of that has to do with the play call.
Yeah, I think a lot of it had to do with just it's tough to do it when you're inaccurate with the football. And he was inaccurate in the pocket. He was inaccurate out of the pocket. He did a great job running, and you saw some of that old Johnny football. But I think for Johnny Manziel, you know, he's got to work on the pocket. And I think they've got to work on getting him weapons because it was so apparent that Marcus Peters and Sean Smith, two very good corners, did pretty much whatever they wanted on the outside of that game. And you had, you know, your receivers, Travis Benjamin, 20 yards. Marlon Moore had one catch for -1 yards. And then Darius Jennings had 3 for 37, the bulk of which came at the end of the game as it was the lesser of all the evils. But when you're trying to play quarterback and you can't get the ball to your wide receivers, it's very difficult. And I thought that was something that really reared its ugly head. Just overall, an ugly performance, 13-32 in the National Football League. That's just not going to get it done. And that's what happened. That's what happened. You had a good defensive game. What did I say? What was my thing? If the Browns were going to win, they had to keep them under 20 points.
Yep.
And they did. And the defense, to their credit, I thought they did a great job. Nate Orchard, if you're asking me the one guy that I think's improved the most this year, and it looks like he might be a good player for this team for a while, it is Nate Orchard.
Yep.
Thought he did a very good job in this game. Still too much confusion in the secondary for my liking. Blown assignment on that Travis Kelce touchdown. You could see that Gipp and Tremont were unhappy with Dante Whitner, who it appeared was not where he was supposed to be.
Right.
And
to comment about that play, it's very clear that two things happened. Tremont Williams was lined up with outside technique in man-to-man coverage, which means he has some – I think it was two-man, if I had to guess, which means two safeties playing half the field and man underneath. And Tremont Williams aligned outside in coverage on Travis Kelce, and he runs the slant, so he's immediately in a chase position. And if that ball is thrown, Tremont Williams, while he's not going to just let him go to a safety, he's expecting inside help, which is why he aligned outside. So either Tremont Williams was wrong in aligning outside, or Dante Whitner, as it's very apparent after, you know, your comments, that Dante Whitner was, in fact, out of position.
Dante Whitner was out of position, and that's why you saw kind of the gesticulating, as it were, from the defensive backs around him on that particular play. 216-578-0850, that is the way to get on board with us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. 216-578-0850. Again, you can call us up. You can tweet the show at Browns_Daily, at Nathan Zagura, at Matt Wilhelm 35. You can let us know there. But Matt, before we get to all of this, tell us about your trip, man. How was it?
Oh, the trip was awesome. So for those that don't know, because it was in fact a surprise, and the kids from time to time do tune into the show, we went on a Disney cruise for Christmas. So that's why I was out Tuesday. I was out Wednesday. And then, of course, Christmas Eve and Christmas, we all I can say is that Disney does it right. They do it right. Everything went off without a hitch. We surprised the kids on Tuesday morning with Elfie, our elf on the shelf, surprised them with a letter. And he was inside a boat under our tree with some other Disney friends, telling them that their bags were packed and it was time to go to the airport to fly down to...
And how did that happen?
They were just like, today? Like, and I'm like, we're going to be on a boat, a big boat in the water in like 5 hours. And they're like, and they just went, I mean, obviously went crazy, you know, grabbing their belongings, packing their backpacks to go on the trip. But it was amazing. Out of Florida, did Key West, did A Day at Sea, did Castaway Cay, Disney's private island, and then our way back and made it back in time to catch most of the game yesterday. So it was an overall great trip and a great Christmas.
Awesome, man. And we're certainly glad to have you back. We miss you, but obviously we understand. You got to take care of the family.
It's once in a lifetime, right?
Yeah, man. You got to do it.
But now I'm sold, and I want to do it every year.
Now you want to do that every year? You're ready?
Yes.
Yes. All right. I like it. So 216-578-0850 coming up. We're going to hear from Johnny Manziel. We're going to hear, of course, from Mike Pettine from the podium. We're going to try to get a guest for you as well around the 2 o'clock hour. What positives do you take away from yesterday's performance? Dante Whitner said after yesterday's games the Browns found their quarterback for next season. Do you agree or disagree? I think the jury is still very much out on that, on the field and off the field with Johnny Manziel. So you could call us up. Those are our Ohio Business Machines hot topics of the day. This team has not been able to get it done this season as they now sit at 3-12, 3-17 in the last 20. It's close. There are no moral victories, unfortunately, for the Cleveland Browns.
But that's the NFL.
Yep.
Every game, I mean, you look at, and I know there were a couple blowouts out there yesterday, but that's the NFL. I don't know what the average margin of victory is this year, but it's usually somewhere around a field goal. And the good teams find a way to win. And I think as we go back, and something I'll do just to put it in perspective is look at the 9-game winning streak by the Kansas City Chiefs. Have all their games been blowouts, or have they figured out a way to win or close out a football game, either make that one play offensively or get that stop defensively as they did yesterday in a football game to secure a victory?
That's what they got to do. Got to find a way to get it done. You pulled out, so you had the fake punt. You had an interception from Nate Orchard in a big return.
You're 3-4 on fourth down.
Yeah, you were doing it. Not able to ultimately get the victory. All right, 216-578-0850. Gern Wilhelm back with you on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
Get the lowdown on your Cleveland Cavaliers with ESPN's Brian Windhorst. Hey, Windy, Friday mornings at 8 on ESPN 1540 KNR2.
Gabriel and Jennings and Barnage to the right. Duke Johnson on the left hip of Manziel. Fourth and 10. Johnny back to pass. Steps. Fires. Got a man open at the 20. And it's caught. It's Jennings. He's got a first down. 8 seconds left to go. They may run out of time. 5 seconds left to go. 4 seconds left to go. 1 second left to go. And the game is over.
Well, that official, he's not going to win a 40-yard dash that ran it in the... get the ball spotted.
He never got the ball spotted, and they could not spike it, and the game is over, and the Chiefs hang on for a win over the Browns. Their ninth win in a row, 17-13, Kansas City.
Well, welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. And, of course, 2016 Browns season tickets are now available, offering flexible payment options, big savings over single-game ticket prices, the same great seat every game and more. And it's a great home schedule next year. It really is. 2016 Browns home opponents, obviously you get Pittsburgh, Baltimore, and Cincy. You get the New England Patriots.
Sweet.
You get the New York Jets.
Yeah.
You get the Dallas Cowboys. You get the New York Giants. And you get the San Diego or whatever blank Chargers, whatever city. So place your deposit on the Browns mobile app, clevelandbrowns.com, or call 440-824-3434 today. Before we get to the phone lines, got to give a shout out to our guy Stan the Man out of the hospital. He was apparently knocking on death's door, so we're glad that he is far away from that door and doing well. So Stan, if you're listening, much love, brother. Hope you are feeling better. And that you're going to be all right, my brother. All right, Stan, so thank you so much, friend. Thanks, everybody who listens and supports this show and hangs out with us here. We know it's been a tough year to be a Browns fan, and it's been a tough year to do Cleveland Browns Daily when things have not gone the way that any of us would have wanted.
Not the way we thought.
But we certainly appreciate all of you guys being with us here on the show. All right, let's go to the phones now. 216-578-0850. Kevin in North Olmsted then. Kevin.
And, gentlemen, we all appreciate you because you've done a great job this year in keeping it all, well, giving us good insight into this team and the decision-making process. So
thank you very much.
My pleasure. Matt, I think I got a question for you first. But
sure.
Nathan, you were down on the field, too. I'm a little curious, you know, and all, and I'm really happy to hear how you opened the show, Nathan, talking about Johnny. The one thing that I'd love your input on is, why is it that Manziel was, quote, so gassed at the end of the game or in the fourth quarter? I mean, I know, of course, he had 108 yards. I know he was running for his life a couple of times. But we are in the 15th week of the season, and theoretically, he should be in fantastic shape. And I don't, you know, I don't want this to be an overarching question. I realize how I'm framing it is already maybe setting it up that way. But to me, I looked at the kid when he was gassed at the beginning of the fourth quarter, and I said to myself, he had his helmet off on the sideline, and I said to myself, man, he looks like, and I've got a 23-year-old, so he looks like somebody that was out partying all night or two nights ago or something. He absolutely looked gassed. So that's one thing. And the second thing that I'll leave you guys with is that, you know, I do find that DeFilippo has done a really good job on tough circumstances over the last 2 to 3 weeks, even when they're not scoring points. I mean, he seems like he's not only been super creative in how to approach it with maybe lesser talent, if you will, but I think he's shown a really, you know, good potential upside to him. And that's it, guys. Happy New Year to you, and thanks
Happy
a million
New Year
for all
to you as
did.
Well. Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for the call.
And I'll just give a little perspective, and Nathan, you can maybe, you know, continue the conversation after I speak. And I think, you know, I love the show Sports Science, you know, mm-hmm. when they say how fast, how big, how much velocity, how much pressure, all those things. The one thing we have to, and this is not an excuse by any means, because I can't say why Johnny Manziel, if he was out or so on and so forth, and I'm not even going to speculate about that, but I would like to say that Johnny Manziel, amongst all starting quarterbacks yesterday, probably not only yards, like yards for scrimmage, but runs around and has more, say, if he were wearing a Fitbit, and you know, yesterday, amongst all 32 quarterbacks, I would say he probably ran a half a mile more than any other quarterback in the National Football League because of how much he was out of the pocket, how much he was running. You know, his dropbacks are deeper than everybody else, and he extends plays as well as anybody else in the National Football League. Now, is he accurate in doing so? No, but I think his movement in a football game is more than any quarterback had yesterday.
And there were times, to be fair to him, there were times that he was absolutely running for his life.
Correct. That's my whole point. It's in playing the game, he ran more than any quarterback did yesterday.
Yes, he most certainly did. 216-578-0850. Also, he was playing with the flu yesterday, it has been reported. I don't know. It could have an effect on your stamina. I don't know.
It does.
578-0850. Tony in Canton. Tony, welcome to the show.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Fantastic. Hey, I think you guys are just being a little too hard on Johnny. You mentioned footwork. You mentioned ball was behind potential receivers. All of that is going to get learned and caught up to with live actions with the ones. And there's no better way to learn than on the job. And as far as playing in the weather, you guys were mentioning the weather, again, that's just something that's going to come with play time. I'm sure he played in bad weather in college, the different stops they went to, and I'm sure he played in bad weather in high school. So I don't think it's as foreign as being made out to be on the radio today. Also, this guy did so much yesterday with the lack of talent and personnel that he should be commended. I mean, can you imagine this guy, say like Winston down in Tampa Bay that had an Evans or
Vincent
Bridgewater
Jackson.
Who had a running back like Adrian Peterson.
I think you've got to get him some weapons. My dream scenario is Josh Gordon comes back and you get Laquon Treadwell and all of a sudden.
Beautiful. Music to my ears, my friend. If you had those two out there on that field with Johnny Manziel and any resemblance of a running game, this offense would look so much different.
I think it would look so much different. And I really do believe, and people might say that I'm crazy or whatever, but I've seen enough of Duke Johnson and Isaiah Crowell to think that if you had the right set, right offense around them in terms of the outside, those guys can play. Crowell can play, and Duke Johnson can play. So I think you could be okay at running back. I think the upgrade you need are at that receiver position so that you have people that teams have to game plan for. If all of a sudden you had an offense where Travis Benjamin and Gary Barnage were your third and fourth options, or you know, vice versa, you're going to have a pretty good offense. You're going to have some nice weapons for Johnny. And a guy like Johnny needs bigger targets with bigger catch radiuses.
And what I would love to go out and get, you know, either via free agency or via the draft, is I think we need a young, athletic tight end, you know, to be able to, like, flex out opposite Gary Barnage, so you can come out with two tight ends and have someone be as efficient or basically become the heir apparent in this offense of a guy like Gary Barnage, because he is having – you know, a career year deep into his career, but he's been extended here by the Browns, so he's not going anywhere. And then I think you need to go out and get, like, a bruising tight end that is, it's very clear when he's in the game, there is a run tendency, so that you can put Barnage in him instead of, and I know Jim Dre's playing that role for us right now, but I just want a guy, like, and I know a guy that I played with that played, you know, 8 years in the league and might have 15 receptions is Ben Hartsock. Played at Ohio State, but he was with the Jets, he was with the Panthers, and he came in the game, huge run tendency, but he won, you know, against a defensive end or an outside linebacker very consistently.
He certainly did, and I think when you look at it, again, this is an opportunity. That's what Randall Telfer supposedly is going to be for this team. Let's go to the phone line. Stan, the man, the myth, the legend. Stan, how are you?
Gentlemen, thanks a lot for acknowledging me at the opening of the show.
You're welcome, Stan. Thank you.
I had a nice conversation with Kevin Griffin this morning.
Good.
And I really hope that he is part of the organization next year.
I would wish
that they would extend your program by 1 hour in the season and more money for all the players. Like, not the players. You're the players, you know. You are.
I like what you're talking about, Stan.
You know what I'm saying? But anyways, I'm looking back at my media guide here a little bit. And, you know, in 1968 and 1970, we had an opportunity to win games. We didn't get to the Super Bowl then. I woke up this morning with, hemorrhoid syndrome, okay, because of the loss yesterday. I thought I'd throw something, you know, comical into the mix. But, you know, they talk about Johnny and this gentleman calling in saying that he might have been hungover or something to that effect, or partying. You try running around like he did and try to do the things he did. You know, the defense rose to the occasion in the second half, and we didn't take advantage of our opportunities, and I wish the Browns well in 2016. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Stan. Yes. All right. Our guy, Stan the man. Glad to hear that he's doing well there. Let's get now one more. Jim Onicell. Jim, welcome to the show.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
All right. You know, I was going to call up and ask if I could speak to the two Johnny haters, but I'll make it a little bit better. Like the Kevin guy that called up, that guy's an idiot. So Flipper really did a great job. Really? I can't wait till they fire these four goofs, Farmer, Penton, and the offensive and defensive coordinator. And I knew there was going to be, as soon as we lost, of course we're going to lose the game. And I knew it was Johnny's fault that we lost the game. It's not the 5'7" receivers that we have. It's not the fact that we have no blocking, that we have no defensive line, that we have a sketchy running game. It's because Johnny couldn't complete the passes. Okay. That's my take on it.
No, Johnny struggled from the pocket. I think we all would agree with that. To me, there's no question that is something that he did. He struggled mightily with that.
And I think his point was not so much that it's that Johnny doesn't have a functioning football team around him that causes him to fail.
Right.
So, I think it's very clear that if you want to win football games in the National Football League, a lot of things have to change for the Cleveland Browns. That is clear as day to anybody. Someone who watched them for the first time, or someone who's watched them all year long, or their entire life. That's very clear. A lot has to change.
A lot has to change. You are exactly right about that.
There's no tweaks.
A lot has to change. A lot has to change in terms of just looking at, you know, the talent that is around him. If you decide you're going with Johnny Manziel, you need to build not your offense to him, because Johnny Manziel needs to be able to play in an NFL caliber offense, but you've got to get him weapons. I would argue that you look at the young quarterbacks in the National Football League from his draft class. Okay, there were three others. Blake Bortles. Blake Bortles has Allen Robinson. He's got Marquise Lee. He's got Allen Hurns. Now, they hit on Allen Hurns. Great job by their scouting part. But Allen Robinson was a second-round pick. Marquise Lee was a second-round pick. T.J. Yeldon, they drafted to be their running back, was a second-round pick. And then they made a big free agent splash signing on Julius Thomas.
Who's been hurt a lot and underwhelming, but coming on late.
They gave him weapons.
Correct.
And targets. And Allen Robinson should have been a Cleveland Brown. Then you look at Oakland. You draft Amari Cooper. You draft Clive Walford. You sign Michael Crabtree, which was certainly a more judicious signing than Dwayne Bowe, it turns out. Or at least he was given the opportunity to prove that he was a more judicious signing than Dwayne Bowe. You draft Clive Walford, the tight end, out of the U. You go, you have Latavius Murray, a young running back. So you've got him surrounded with excellent skill position talent and a difference maker, a true number one receiver. Then you go to Minnesota, Teddy Bridgewater. They draft Stephon Diggs, who's turned out to be very good. They get Mike Wallace in free agency, who's turned out to be okay for them. But they've also got Adrian Peterson, and that's what their offense is built around, and they have a big-time tight end in Kyle Rudolph. So he has got a supporting cast that is great. Not one guy on our team
is at the level of anybody that you really just spoke about.
Right. Maybe Barnage would start for Oakland.
Yep.
You know, Minnesota probably wouldn't swap out Rudolph for Barnage at this point. On this year's production, they should, but I don't think that they would do that. I don't think that you look at, you know, in Jacksonville, they would rather have Julius Thomas, obviously. The running backs, I think Latavius Murray, Adrian Peterson, T.J. Yeldon probably would all get the nod over our running backs.
Yep.
Now, I think Duke Johnson could have a role on those teams.
Sure.
But not one of our receivers plays for those teams.
No. And you know what? And while I was on the plane flying JetBlue, you've got the amazing little in-the-headrest DirecTV. I was able to watch some of the New England Jets football game yesterday. And the one thing that chaps my you-know-what that I thought would have been available to the Cleveland Browns to be a playmaker and help us win right now, if that is essentially our plan, was the year that Brandon Marshall's having a franchise year for the New York Jets.
Yep.
And he was available, and what was he traded for? A fifth-round pick?
For a sixth. Something
for
like
a sixth-round pick.
Uh-huh.
I mean, those are the assets that we have out the wazoo, are those sixth- and seventh-round picks because of compensatory. And I know you can't trade those, or this year you can, whatever that rule is being changed. But he's a guy that I thought, as a veteran, amongst Josh Gordon being added to this roster, amongst maybe another young playmaker that would have helped Josh McCown, Connor Shaw, Johnny Manziel, you know, all these guys, it would have been a huge difference and something that I thought we should have been more aggressive with.
Absolutely. Certainly should have been. There is no question about it. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to hear from Johnny Manziel, hear what he had to say after the game against the Kansas City Chiefs. Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
Don't get me started, love. I've had too much to drink.
Smith takes the snap. Short drop. Looking and throws. It's deflected and picked off. And it's Nate Orchard who ends up with the ball. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50. Gets away from one man, and then they got him from behind. Down the field they came, and Ja Reed made the tackle at the Kansas City 41-yard line. Robertson and Orchard each had the ball, and then it's finally picked off by Nate Orchard.
Well, Robertson tipped the ball. Orchard grabbed it, and then Robertson tried to take it back. Orchard kept it. Chiefs weren't sure who had it, and all of a sudden, Nate Orchard is down the field for another 20-some yards.
Something's gotta give soon. Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. And let's hear now from the Browns quarterback, Johnny Manziel, following his game against Kansas City.
You know, you got to give a lot of credit, you know, to our defense in the second half. I thought we put some good drives together. When it came down to it, I don't think I was good enough in crunch time today. I thought I was extremely subpar and cost us some points. I believe the second and eight on the eight or the 10 or whatever it was. Then the following drive, the fourth and seven. Really, that series of that second to last drive, second, third, fourth down. It was not very good execution by me. So I'm pretty sour about it right now from a personal standpoint, because I think the guys around me played good enough for us to win the game today, and I didn't do enough for them.
Did you think you'd have the opportunity to win as much as you did and as effectively?
I don't think we had showed some of those looks on the zone read stuff that we had this year. So they were really aggressive, and I think the key to opening up the run game with me was to have our initial run game with our backs get going, which I think happened as well. So, you know, I think it was a combination of the two.
You mentioned that fourth down on the second last drive. You threw in the end zone, but no one was there. What happened?
Yeah, that was just my fault. I just thought Trav had a go ball, and Trav had a post. You know, I wanted to give him a chance. Really, Gary was the matchup one-on-one, and probably would have kept the sticks moving, but, you know, it sucks. You know, that's on me.
What did it feel like making so many plays, which is in place? Did that help keep this game close?
Yeah, I mean, we moved the chains on some third downs. Started off the half with a nice 30, 40-yard run. And you know, I think it took some of the pressure off the running backs, and then off the pass game when we had some play action stuff. So, you know, it definitely did feel nice to be running around a little bit and have some open lanes.
You're driving the tying score, and you had the intentional grounding on your pass to your offensive lineman.
Mm-hmm.
What happened on that?
Yeah, I just ended up being man coverage, hung on Duke on our rail route a little, not long enough. He ended up popping open, but. Just trying to make a play, and I didn't throw it away in time. I saw somebody flash, and you know, made a mistake. So I had plenty of time and was out of the pocket to throw that ball away. Like I said, that was a play that really sticks out where we gave up points. You know, that's our touchdown drive that we needed right there, and instead we got three and had to go try and get another one. So yeah, I'm pretty upset. You know, the refs aren't going to hurry because we need them to hurry. Only thing that probably could have happened is Darius, you know, throw the ball back into the middle of the field, but still we're not going to be able to spot it ourselves. There's still going to have to be a ref that comes out of somewhere and spots it. So, you know, it would have been close anyway that if we spike it, do we spike it with a second? Do we spike it with 2 seconds and have one play left? Or, you know, you never know. But, you know, obviously frustrating there. No, not with that concept. We were going into it with the mindset of catch, get down, and try and clock it with 15 seconds left. We felt like that was, you know, ample time.
So the frustrating part, you're throwing, not anything else.
Sure, yeah, it's 100%. You know, I make that throw, you know, 9 times out of 10 on the deep over to Gary that was intercepted. I mean, I hit him on that route all day, every day in practice, since OTA, since freaking last year. And to leave that inside versus a good corner who's speedy, you know, that's a mistake. I think to come out the second play of the game, a little more touch on that ball, and Gary scores on the second play of the game from scrimmage. So I just missed too many throws. I just didn't feel like I put it exactly where I wanted today. You know, luckily we were in it because of the run game, because, you know, I didn't do a good enough job in the pass game.
Was it the conditions that caused
your passing? I don't know. There was a couple times the ball didn't feel great in my hand, whether it was, You know, a little slippery or whatnot. So I know a couple of them came out like that, but you know, deep over to Gary, just left it too far inside. You gotta step wide and make sure you put that ball in front. And sometimes when you feel like you put it on him in the right spot, you put it, you know, you leave it a little bit behind. So you really have to over exaggerate getting that ball out in front. It's either our ball or nobody's, and that ended up being their ball. So it's huge off a turnover that we got created by Nate Orchard, who did a heck of a job getting it into, you know, their territory. So, you know, I'm definitely shouldering a lot for this blame. I mean, for this loss, this is, you know, Wayne, you know, regardless of what our record is, where we are in the season, you know, it sucks not to win, especially when, you know, our coach and the other 10 guys put us in a position to try and, you know, get in the end zone there at the end. And, you know, I just felt like I didn't do the right thing in crunch time, like I said, to start off. And I think that's the moral of the entire story of the game.
How good is Kansas City's defense? Winning streak now.
Yeah, it's impressive for them to start out how they did and to rebound back. I think that's, you know, extremely impressive. I don't think it's been done very much. You know, they're missing a couple guys on the edge that make them, you know, extremely, extremely dangerous. But, you know, regardless, I think the guys that they had in there stepped up. You know, they're able to smother you outside with some big, fast, strong corners. They have good safety plays, so.
Secondary was pretty good.
Sure, yeah, their secondary was really good. I think Derek Johnson did a really good job spying and really clouding up the middle as well. He was always there whenever, you know, the play could have gone a little bit longer, I feel like. So, you know, that's a very solid unit. Today wasn't good enough. You know, maybe hostile environments, but we're still 0-2. So, 1-2 since I've been back in there. So, I don't know. We got a home game next week against Pittsburgh to try and right the ship. It's the last one of the year. So, what better way for us than to go out the season with a win? So, you know, that's what we're on to now. As disappointed as this is, you know, we'll learn from it. Got to be better in the crunch time next time.
That's Johnny Manziel, the competitor, obviously frustrated by what happened there in that game against, of course, the Kansas City Chiefs. I like the competitiveness. I do. I like all of that. But at the same time, it is one of those situations where if you are the Cleveland Browns, you've got to find a way to win. Johnny was good, as he said himself, not good enough, especially in the clutch moments. Doug Deacon is going to be with us at 2 o'clock. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines again, 216-578-0850. Your thoughts on the Browns and the Chiefs and where this team stands. What do you need to see happen as you get ready to head into the new year here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
That's Andy Lee to punt for the Browns. Back inside his 10 at the 8. They fake the hit. They snap it to the up man, Poyer, and he drives the ball out over the 30 to the 32 and a first down. The fake punt. And they snap the ball to the up man, Jordan Poyer, and he runs it for a first down.
They stole a possession there, but were not able to steal the game. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm for you here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. And it was an interesting week in the NFL, kind of a wacky week. The Rams went into Seattle, where the Browns just were, and beat the Seahawks. The Steelers controlling their own destiny. All they had to do was go to Baltimore, where the Browns won earlier this year, and beat Ryan Mallett in his first start with the Ravens. He'd only been with them.
I laughed when he threw the touchdown pass. I'm not going to lie.
He'd only been with them for a little while. And yet they were able to go in there, and they saw it, and they went in there, and they got it done. They just went in there and beat them. And it was just kind of that simple. And it was one of those things that was shocking to see, quite frankly.
Yeah, and something that I pointed out to you that we can kind of discuss here for a few minutes. As the Cleveland Browns 2015 season is coming to a close, and you look towards building towards a future and building a base for a winning franchise, something that you know, I always go through the statistics that, you know, sometimes pile up in here. There's specific information in these that I look at and I kind of like turn into positive information or very telling information. And the one thing that I looked at, as I always look to see where the Cleveland Browns rank in total offense and total defense. They're now 26th in total defense, 23rd in total offense. The Pittsburgh Steelers, their opponent week 17, is 3rd in offense and 23rd in defense. The one telling stat that I want to pull out when you talk about an opportunity to make the playoffs or teams that will this year compete for that Vince Lombardi trophy, total defense. And as a defensive player, that's why the emphasis is on defense and why in some cases we need to get this defense fixed as we did in the second half, but collectively as the season has gone on. Total defense ranks as follow. Number one, Denver. Two, Seattle. Three, Houston. Four, Carolina. Five, Arizona. Six, the New York Jets. Seven, the New England Patriots. Eight, the Cincinnati Bengals. And nine, the Kansas City Chiefs. So nine of the 12 teams that have already qualified to make the playoffs rank 1 through 9 in total defense. And then you look at offense. Arizona 1, New England 4, Seattle 5, Jets 8, Cincinnati 10, Carolina 11. Then you jump down. Washington 17, Houston 20, Denver 21, Green Bay 24, Kansas City 25, Minnesota 26. So defense wins championships, and yep. 9 of the 12 teams that will make the playoffs in the NFL rank 1 through 9, and yet offenses are very sporadic amongst where they rank. So while we talk about quarterback, talk about playmakers, talk about a running game, an offensive line to protect and block and all these other things, if we had a defense that ranked 15 or better, I promise you our record would be closer to what we finished at last year than we will this year.
And that's so, in theory, that's what they were supposed to do.
Right.
That's what they were supposed to be. The theory of it was not wrong. The execution of it has been lacking.
Correct.
Both in terms of personnel acquisition and then implementation of said personnel on the field. You're right. That's what the good teams can do, and that's why you see teams like Houston being able, and now not that they're winning and their record is that great, but when you look at Houston, they've been able to win despite the fact that they've started. They have a win with Brian Hoyer. They have a win with Ryan Mallett this year. They have multiple wins with TJ Yates, and they have a win with Brandon Whedon.
But what's the one consistent thing that they have?
That
because
defense.
Also, Arian Foster did not start the season healthy. He then came back and got hurt again.
J.J. Watt.
J.J. Watt.
Has been consistent. That defense.
Romeo Crennel, and that defense has been consistent.
That is it. That's it. That's the only thing that's been consistent about that team. And you're right. I think that the theory of having a good team defensively. Now, I would also point out with you, though, as you go through those teams again, who are their quarterbacks?
Quarterbacks on defense?
No, quarterbacks on offense.
Okay, yeah.
Of those good defenses.
But I meant of the you have Brock / Peyton, number one. You've got Russell Wilson. Then you have Houston at three, the four guys that you just talked about. You get Cam Newton.
And that's why they're, by the way, middling. I mean, their record
correct.
Is not great.
Yeah. Correct.
Cam.
Cam, Carson Palmer,
yep.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, journeyman, Tom Brady.
Who's played very well this
Andy
year.
Andy Dalton, Alex Smith.
Right, so you've got good – I'd say of those nine, you have six – for sure franchise quarterbacks.
Correct.
And you could make the case with Alex Smith.
He's at the right franchise. He's the franchise quarterback for the right franchise.
He's going to go to the playoffs, what, for the second time in 3 years?
Yes.
With that team. So that's interesting. Tom in Streetsboro joining the discussion now. What's up, Tom?
Hey, how you doing, Nathan? Matt?
What's up, man?
How are you?
Hey, why don't I give you guys a compliment? I've been listening for a long time. It's the first time I've ever called, but I find you guys be very knowledgeable and very balanced, and it's really refreshing to be able to get that when there's so much spin out there on the channel.
Oh, thank you.
Just a quick comment. Obviously, Johnny played a bad game yesterday by his own admission, and anybody who could watch could tell. I'm not too bent about it because he put in four good efforts, right? And he's got a down game. I remember watching Bernie back in the day. And, you know, every game Bernie played wasn't a thing of beauty, you know. Most of them there were, but he had his downsides, too. Also, I noticed through the press conference, Manziel was coughing and wheezing a little bit. So I'm wondering if it's true that he did have the flu or something like that. Not that that would write it all off, but you gotta figure if you're running around, you got stuff in your lungs, you are going to be winded. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But overall, I mean, my call on him, I've seen enough from him. I've seen enough of the intangibles, his desire to win, his competitiveness. I think he's a smart kid, and I think the things that he lacks are coachable and can be corrected. But I think we have our QB. I really do.
I certainly hope that you are right. I need to see more continued development. He's going to have some rough games, which he did, obviously, yesterday from the pocket, but showed his playmaking ability and the fact that this team was certainly ready to be in the mix despite the fact that he played poorly from the pocket. They are going to go on the road and beat a team that had won 8 in a row in a hostile environment and a bad day there in Kansas City. So that was, at the very least, that was encouraging to see from him there. All right, when we come back, Doug Deacon, the color man, from the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network, will join us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.